6. Gut feelings. Would you go bungee jumping? Strike up a conversation with a stranger? Eat a whole pie in one sitting? Strange as it sounds, your gut bacteria may be influencing these and many other choices and habits. We celebrate the brain as the seat of human intellect, but mounting evidence suggests our behavior is governed not just from the top down, but also, literally, from the bottom up. And for all we know, microbes that inhabit our genital tracts and noses may also have a say in our behaviors and actions. The study of the human microbiome, all the tiny organisms that call the body home, is a frontier as wild and untrammeled as any in science. And how these tenets influence the brain is perhaps the least understood of all their roles. The majority of them are so supremely adapted to life inside us that scientists have had little luck coaxing them to grow in petri dishes. Only recently have researchers possessed the technology even to estimate their numbers, much less characterize precisely what they do. The first major census of our microbial tenants got underway in 2005, aided by the development of superfast gene sequencing machines for distinguishing the genetic fingerprint of different organisms. Spearheaded by an international consortium of scientists, the project initially focused on characterizing microbes that inhabit healthy people. Individuals with acne, bad tooth decay, or more serious ailments were excluded from the survey. From this winnowed-down pool of recruits, the researchers sampled material from stools, armpits, behind the folds of the ear, the back of the throat, between the toes, inside the vagina, and every other nook and cranny that could be reached with a probe. The microbes were then cultured and their genetic material analyzed segment by segment. From the output, computers calculated the size of the microbiota community, the sum total of viruses, bacteria, fungi, protozoa, and other organisms that dwell within each of us. The final tally came to more than 100 trillion organisms, dwarfing the population of human cells by a factor of 10. The amount of genetic material of microbial origin surpassed our own by 150 times. To put it plainly, 90% of you is not you. Some of these microbes cross the placenta and take up residence inside us while we're still in the womb. But the biggest wave of colonization happens at birth. After the mother's water breaks, microbes lining her vaginal canal jump aboard the infant with each contraction. From that moment forward, each of us becomes a magnet for microbes. They come from the doctors who deliver us, our swaddling blankets, our first pacifiers, and the air around us. They invade every crack and crevice of our bodies, especially the gut, which draws them with its bounty of nutrients. Over the first 2 years, this population shifts dramatically and is highly idiosyncratic from baby to baby. But then, as infants transition to solid foods, it stabilizes. Children and adults typically harbor on the order of a few thousand species of microbes, and not two people have exactly the same composition of them. Your microbiome is as unique as your fingerprint. Our microbial cells, or selves, for each of us is in reality a superorganism, defy easy classification. A number of strains labeled pathogens, the census revealed, actually inhabit us all the time, causing trouble only when we're run down or when unusual conditions favor their growth. The same species of bacteria may be a helper, a symbiont, a harmless freeloader, a commensal, or a herder, a parasite, depending on circumstances that are constantly in flux. In the gut, resident microbes take a share of every meal you eat, but in return, they aid in digestion, synthesizing vitamins and disarming dangerous bacteria that you ingest. They also churn out virtually every major neurotransmitter that tunes our emotions, notably GABA, dopamine, serotonin, acetylcholine, and noradrenaline, as well as hormones with psychoactive properties. To varying degrees, scientists now suspect, intestinal microbes influence whether you're happy or sad, anxious or calm, energetic or sluggish, and by signaling the brain when you've had enough to eat, perhaps even whether you're fat or thin. Scientists are still trying to figure out how exactly gut bacteria get messages delivered to the distant outpost of the head, but they have a few ideas. Some psychoactive compounds made by gut bacteria, they believe, are detected by the enteric nervous system, a thick skein of neurons that runs the entire length of the gut. This network has more neurons than the spinal cord, hence its nickname, the second brain, and it connects to the big brain upstairs via the vagus nerve, a major route by which gut bacteria make their voices heard. Indeed, 90% of information transmitted by this cable goes from the viscera to the brain, not the other way around, as scientists for years had assumed. In the process of breaking down food, gut bacteria also produce metabolites with neuroactive properties that may stimulate the same nerve cable or be transported by the bloodstream to the brain. Intestinal bacteria may engage the immune system, which can lower our mood and energy level, yet another pathway by which our microbiota may change our behavior. Perhaps related to that observation, depressed people tend to have abnormally high amounts of certain gut bacteria, and they are more likely to have elevated biomarkers for inflammation and immune-mediated response. Intriguingly, certain GI disturbances, notably ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, are marked by disruptions of the gut microbiome, and these illnesses are associated with an unusually high incidence of mental disturbances in comparison to serious diseases that affect other parts of the body. Indeed, 50 to 80% of those who suffer from these conditions are clinically depressed. More surprising, specific abnormalities in the composition of the human microbiota have been linked to autism spectrum disorder, ASD, a condition characterized by increased anxiety, depression, and impaired social ability. Rodents that display behaviors that mirror many of those observed in children with ASD show similar changes in their gut microbiomes, and when healthy bacteria are introduced into their intestines, their behavior is largely normalized. That observation has raised hopes that it might be possible to develop microbiome-based therapies for ASD, though scientists are a far cry from translating the finding into clinical treatments. Obviously, a lot is going on in the gut. Its microbiota, combined with the immune cells and second brain, constitute a complex and diverse ecosystem, a rainforest growing within each of us, if you will. So figuring out what gut bacteria are doing to one another, or to us, and why, is beyond anyone's grasp. Standard models of manipulation may not apply here. It's clear, however, that animals' behavior changes markedly with the composition of their gut microbiota. The most striking proof of this comes from germ-free mice, that is, animals specially reared under sterile conditions to be devoid of gut microbes. A normal, healthy mouse with its intestinal microbiota intact is a quick and eager learner. Show it a new object like a napkin ring and it will circle and sniff it with great interest. If placed in a maze, it's keen to explore new passages. Germ-free mice demonstrate none of this natural curiosity. It's as if they have no recollection of objects and places they've recently explored, for they're just as likely to favor what's familiar over what's new, exciting, or different. These rodents are also oddly fearless. They boldly venture where mice with normal microbiota know not to go. Bright lights and open spaces that scream danger to the average mouse don't deter them in the least. In fact, they're so immune to anxiety that they show no signs of distress even when separated from their mothers at birth for 3 hours a day, a trauma that would normally lead to lifelong skittishness and social maladjustment. In addition, germ-free mice scurry about their enclosures more than those with normal microbiota. Just as in the case of mice with autism-like features, transferring healthy gut microbiota into the germ-free animals can normalize many of these behaviors. For example, they become more cautious and less active, but only if done before they are 4 weeks of age. After that, the transplant has no effect, suggesting that microbiota at the start of life shape the very wiring of the brain. Indeed, studies conducted at the Karolinska Institute in Sweden show that early exposure to gut microbiota dramatically affects the expression of hundreds of genes, many involved in transmitting chemical messages in the brain. Bacteria in the gut may even influence personality. The same team that did the maternal deprivation study, Stephen M. Collins, Premisel Berchik, and colleagues at McMaster University in Ontario, Canada, explored this possibility using inbred mice with two distinctly different temperaments. The mice in one strain were unusually calm and not inclined to socialize with their peers. The mice in the other strain displayed traits at the opposite end of the spectrum. They were more high-strung, aggressive, and gregarious. These two breeds also possessed different microbiota, so the researchers decided to see what would happen if they took germ-free mice of one strain and colonized them with the gut bacteria of the other. The result was essentially a personality swap. The calm mice became more agitated and outgoing. The mice that were aggressive quieted down and became less sociable. In other words, each group developed a disposition a little more like the strain that had donated the microbes. Coinciding with that change, the Canadian team detected increased production of a neurochemical called brain-derived growth factor in a part of the brain involved in regulating emotion. Transplanting entire microbiota ecosystems into rodents is not the only way to study the connection between microbiome and mind. A red-hot area of research uses probiotics, such as the healthy bacteria in yogurt, to the same end. This is the domain of John Cryan, a neuroscientist at University College Cork, Ireland. As a PhD student in the early 1990s, he became fascinated by psychoneuroimmunology, a then-emerging field devoted to understanding how the immune system and brain talk to each other. His interest later shifted to the gut because mounting research suggested it might be at the center of that conversation. Landing a job at a university in Cork furthered his burgeoning interest, as it allowed him to collaborate with what's now known as the APC Microbiome Institute, a research center in the same city, whose prime mission is understanding the role of gut bacteria in all aspects of health. After Cryan talked with Ted Dynan, a psychiatrist there, the two scientists decided to join forces to explore the interaction between the brain and the gut. In one early trial, they subjected healthy young animals to stress, a reliable way to turn them into anxious adults, and discovered that their intestinal bacteria were very different from those of animals raised under kinder circumstances. They also were intrigued by the intimate association between digestive disorders and depression. Then, as their thinking evolved, said Cryan, it occurred to them that if your gut can cause maladaptive behavior, could it also be responsible for producing some of the better behaviors that might be involved in emotion and learning? At this point, they got the idea to run behavioral tests on mice fed probiotic bacteria. Full disclosure, the lactobacillus culture they used was provided by a supplement manufacturer. In one such experiment, mice who got the dietary intervention and a control group of untreated animals were placed in a cage and repeatedly given foot shocks paired with a sound. Both groups reacted the same way. They immediately froze, an adaptive response. But the next day, when the researchers played the sound alone to see how well the mice were able to associate it with the punishing stimulus, those given the probiotic froze more frequently than their untreated peers. They attended better to the shock, said Cryan. The animals on lactobacillus learned much better and more efficiently. Cryan, Dynan, and colleagues also examined how probiotic-fed mice responded to a test widely used by the pharmacological industry to assess the efficacy of medicines used for anxiety and depression. The animals were placed in a small tank of water and forced to swim, with no escape route. Panicked, they eventually gave in to despair and became immobile. Untreated animals went only 2 minutes before they lost their will to survive. In contrast, mice fed probiotics before the test swam a full 40 seconds longer. We were really struck by the magnitude of the effect, said Cryan. They behaved as if they were already treated with an antidepressant. Because a neurotransmitter called GABA plays a central role in suppressing the body's response to fear and hopelessness, the researchers looked at the parts of the mice's brains most influenced by that chemical. They found marked changes in those areas. Next, they cut the vagus nerve, the main highway connecting the gut and the brain. The outcome was striking. The animals fed lactobacillus gave up the struggle to survive just as quickly as untreated animals. Not only that, but their brains no longer showed changes in the areas most affected by GABA. Somehow the bacteria are affecting the vagus nerve, said Cryan. Once it's severed, signals can no longer get from the gut to the brain to change its neurochemistry. Findings so dramatic are usually met with skepticism, but quelling doubts in the scientific community, a colleague of Cryan's at McMaster University, John Bienenstock, was able to duplicate the results. The findings also shed light on an often effective but poorly understood treatment for severe refractory depression. Called vagus nerve simulation, VNS, it does exactly what its name suggests. Tiny electrodes are attached to a section of the nerve that runs through the neck, and when they're activated by a battery, the brain gets more stimulation than it ordinarily would, usually accompanied by a lift in mood. This is totally speculative, said Cryan. But are the bacteria acting as a kind of vagus nerve stimulator, essentially mimicking the effects of the therapy? The latest discoveries beg an obvious question. Could probiotics help millions of people who are debilitated by serious mood disorders? Cryan's team and other groups in Europe and North America are now conducting clinical trials to test the therapy on people whose primary problem is anxiety, depression, or bipolar disorder. The results are not yet in, but studies of groups whose mental woes may originate in GI troubles offer encouragement. In one study of 37 patients with functional gastrointestinal disorders, an umbrella term for irritable bowel syndrome and other common gastric complaints that can't be tied to an underlying abnormality. For example, probiotic treatments not only improved their symptoms, but also brought about a significant reduction in their depression and anxiety based on both self-reporting and measurements of stress markers in their saliva and urine. The outcome was impressive given that all of the subjects had previously been treated, without success, at multiple medical centers. A sprinkling of clinical investigations also suggest that probiotic remedies can soothe colicky babies, a condition that torments 20% of newborns along with their frazzled, sleep-deprived parents. In one trial, the approach reduced crying and fussing by 70%. In addition, gathering evidence hints that supplements of healthy bacteria may help to buffer already high-functioning people against everyday stresses and strains. For example, a randomized double-blind trial in France on 55 people with no history of psychological disturbances found that regular consumption of a probiotic reduced blood levels of stress hormones and subjects' ratings of their depression, anxiety, and ability to cope, improvements not seen in the control group. Owing to the small size of the study, one should be cautious about extrapolating too broadly from it. Scientists laud the investigation mainly for pointing the way toward fruitful avenues of research in the future. But its findings mesh well with a first-of-a-kind brain imaging study that linked changes in people's neural functioning to a probiotic-rich diet. Conducted at UCLA by a medical team led by Emerin Meyer and Kirsten Tillich, the trial involved 60 women, all healthy and with no psychiatric disorders, who were randomly assigned to three groups. One group was given bacteria-containing yogurt twice daily for 4 weeks. One group was given a non-fermented milk product twice daily for 4 weeks, and the third group received no intervention. Before and after the experiment, all the women underwent an MRI scan that measured their brain activity during an emotion recognition task. They had to match photos of faces showing the same expressions, either anger, fear, or sadness. Compared to the other women in the study, those who ate the bacteria-containing yogurt displayed subdued brain activity in three regions involved in emotion. cognition, and the processing of sensory information. We have to be cautious in how we interpret the results, Meyer, the study's senior author, told me when I visited him at his sunny office in a massive hospital complex on the UCLA campus. But in his view, the changes seen on the MRI scans suggest that the dietary intervention had a positive impact on brain functioning. The women who got probiotics were less reactive to negative emotions like anger, fear, and sadness. It might be beneficial to not react as strongly to negative emotions. A lot of sensitive people get very nervous if someone frowns on them. It would be interesting, he added, to see what would have happened if we'd used happy faces in the trial. Meyer grew up in Munich and speaks English with an ever so faint German accent that lends him an air of European worldliness and sophistication. His most prominent trait is his far-ranging curiosity, which has led him to seek intellectual adventures and to pile up degrees. While still in medical school, he spent several months living with the Yanomami people of the Amazon, photos of whom appear on his office wall. A group whose microbiota he'd love to study. Over the course of his career, Meyer has acquired expertise in an impressive array of specialties that include gastroenterology, psychiatry, and physiology. In a Venn diagram, probiotics would be represented by the space where these disciplines overlap. So, at least to me, his focus on this topic made perfect sense. But that's not how he saw it. 7 or so years ago, this was a field that I thought was completely bogus, he told me. I've been contacted many times by probiotic companies and always turned them down. But finally, they said, you can design any study you want. And I said, I'll do a very high-risk, placebo-controlled study, and I don't think anything will come of it. But as we saw, the trial didn't turn out as he'd expected. And when he talked about it, he sounded like he was still struggling to wrap his mind around the results, as if he couldn't quite believe his own findings. One reason is that the circuitry involved in the emotion recognition task is very hardwired in our brains. Even monkeys have it. Your reaction to people's expressions happens within milliseconds. Are they angry? Should you get into fighting mode? Are they happy? In which case, you should get into the affiliative state. It was very surprising that something as robust as that could be modulated for 4 weeks of exposure to probiotic species. You might think the company that supplied the bacteria culture for the trial would be pleased with its outcome, but they're paranoid that this could affect sales in a negative way. That when people realize, wow, this affects your emotional state or your mind, they'll stop buying yogurt. Meyer and many of his colleagues want to decrease their dependence on the probiotics industry for funding to do their work. The industry is reluctant to make its data public, and its involvement creates the perception, correct or not, that the researchers' findings may be biased by financial interests. These scientists are at least getting their wish, as money from government agencies has begun pouring into the field, giving researchers the means to pursue avenues of inquiry purely for medical reasons, not just because the results might aid some company's marketing campaign. Presently, the probiotics in foods like yogurt are chosen by companies based on consumers' taste preferences and other commercial considerations. So trying to harness them for therapeutic purposes, said Cryan, is like going into a pharmacy and picking random pills, hoping that they'll affect the brain in a beneficial way. That's not a very effective method of finding clinically useful bacteria, so many researchers are now adopting more targeted strategies. They're screening probiotic bacteria, including strains not on the market, to determine which ones produce neurotransmitters and other psychoactive compounds. Should promising strains be identified, the next step will be feeding them to rodents, and then, if a reduction in anxious behavior is observed, proceeding to human trials. That process will be far more protracted in the case of non-commercial strains of bacteria because the FDA requires that they be as rigorously vetted as new drugs. Alternatively, it may be possible to dispense with bacteria altogether and create medicines simply from the psychoactive chemicals they make. Other scientists are sifting through our microbiota with the goal of gaining a better understanding of individual variations in its content. Knowledge that could prove important in customizing treatments for patients, whether they suffer from mood disorders, GI disturbances, or both. Though each person's gut microbiome is unique in its composition, scientists have discovered that different species tend to cluster together in individuals, albeit in slightly different proportions. Researchers liken individual microbiomes to gardens. All of us have many bacteria in common, what scientists call the core microbiome. These species are frequently the most abundant. Think of them as being like wildflowers, say dandelions, poppies, and primroses. The rest of the microbial species typically vary from person to person. To extend the garden analogy, you may have one type of flower, say marigolds, in large numbers, while someone else may attract purple heather or daffodils. And each of us may harbor rare exotic species, the equivalent of an orchid found only in the highlands of Papua New Guinea. Even the microbes distinct to each of us, however, are alike in one important respect. They tend to fill similar ecological niches, like breaking down different types of protein, fiber, and fat. Diet, in particular whether you get most of your calories from fat, as is typical of people who live in places where food is plentiful and cheap, or from grains and vegetables, as is common in agrarian societies, may influence what microbes blossom inside you. You're also likely to have many of the same species your mother does, and not just because her bacteria were probably the first to colonize you. Our genes, it appears, play a role in determining how hospitable our bodies are to different microbes. Perhaps the most amazing discovery in this area, one that Myers Group brought to light, is that the architecture of an individual's brain correlates with the types of species that are most dominant in his or her gut. From an MRI scan of your head, said Meyer, we can actually predict what microbial gardens are growing within you. These species influence the brain's gray matter density and volume, as well as the white matter tracts that link different regions of the cerebral cortex. In particular, gut bacteria appear to have the biggest influence on the wiring of the brain's reward center, the part that motivates you to seek pleasure and avoid pain. To Meyer, that suggests that gut bacteria might influence background emotions, stress reactivity, whether you're optimistic or pessimistic. Indians of Venezuela jungle, like the Yanomami he once lived among, are exposed to completely different microbes than people living in a city. Obviously, they behave very differently, too. We don't know if gut bacteria might be related to that. Needless to say, he'd like to find out. Gut bacteria could have at least one other very important effect on behavior. They may stimulate food cravings. In the next chapter, I'll explain why they might be motivated to manipulate our appetites, and how, with luck, we might enlist their help to win the battle against obesity.